Every single day I feel the
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. We have our new lights in the background, if you haven't noticed already. I'm experimenting with new things, and I'm always trying to make the thing better, you know? And that's kind of fitting for our guest today. You know, my guy Stephen Smith's in the building. And first of all, before I introduce him, though, I want to thank all of you for the support you've given the show, my brand, and everything that we're doing here at That One and the C-Rock brand. And, you know, listening to this show is something that can help you. Because I've been intentional from the start 4 years ago with this show to bring great guests to you, to bring you content and information on their journeys so that you can understand that you're not alone if you're going through some hurdles, setbacks, difficulties, and also what to do when things are going good, because that's just as important. So today's guest, Stephen Smith, founded sports technology company Kitman Labs in 2012 to enable professional and elite sports teams to help reduce injury risk and increase player availability. Prior to founding Kitman Labs, Stephen was senior injury rehabilitation and conditioning coach with the Leinster Rugby Club. Did I pronounce that right?
Close. Leinster.
Leinster. The Leinster Rugby Club in Ireland for 6 years. He's earned his undergraduate degree in sport and exercise rehabilitation from Carlow Institute of Technology and his master's degree in football rehabilitation from Edgehill University in 2011. We're going to learn a lot more about Stephen here. And Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mike. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, look, dude, we started our conversation in the green room before this. Before I get into my famous question, I said, "Are you Stephen A. Smith?" And do you want to like kind of share what you said to me when I asked you that question?
Yeah, I am. I am Stephen A. Smith. But where I'm from, that's less controversial than where I live now. So I'm learning how special and unique that is.
Yeah, the middle name Andrew, huh? So interesting. And I guessed that before you told me, didn't I?
You did. I tell you what, dude, it's pretty incredible when I show up at hotels, and especially given the industry that I work in, when you show up with things like the NFL Combine or things like that, and they have Stephen A. Smith on the booking, like they expect somebody different to show up at some point in time. It works in my favor and against me at different points in time, depending on who the relevant person I'm interacting with is, because I think he's a little bit like chalk and cheese, right?
Yeah, well, this happened to me one time. I was at a golf tournament, and it was a what do they call it before the actual golf tournament? They have a pro-am. Yeah, and I was looking at the sheet and of the pairings that were going to come through, and one said Tom Brady, and I'm like, oh, I was telling my son, like, Tom Brady's here, dude. Tom Brady's here, and it came through, and it was some guy, and it wasn't Tom Brady. It was a short guy, and I'm like, what the heck? Found out it was like a CEO of a company. And so anyway, it's happened to me before. But hey, listen, so Stephen, I want to start the show the right way. And that's with the question, what are you made of?
Yeah, I obviously I looked at a couple of your shows before and saw this question, and I've been pondering how to answer that. But I think, the simplest way is 100% pure Irish love, ambition, and dreams. That's what I'm made of.
Well, I play golf with some guys from Ireland, and they've been in the United States for a long time. And their accent, they don't work on their accents. Like, they just stuck with it, man. And yours is not as like strong as theirs. How long have you been in the United States now?
10 years.
10 years? Okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I noticed a little bit of it, but it's not like theirs, man. Sometimes I have to tell them to slow down.
Yeah. Well, I think given the industry that I've been in and what I've been doing, it's kind of, it's naturalized over the last 10 years. There's certain words that I say that I think are still pretty Irish, but When I go home to Ireland, they tell me that I sound like a Yank. And when I'm over here, like, you know, and I get chatting with a couple of friends and things are a bit more normal, some of the Irish comes out and they tell me I still sound like a Paddy. So it's still in there somewhere.
That's awesome, man. I love it. And, you know, they're fun to hang out with. I don't drink much anymore, if at all. But they're really fun to hang out with. When I used to, after golf, we play golf together and then we go out. They were the most fun people to hang out with, man.
Yeah, that's when the real competition starts afterwards.
Yeah, man. But look, everybody's got a story, Stephen. What is your story?
Yeah, I think I've been involved in sport my whole life. Loved, you know, played elite level rugby growing up, and you know, fell in love with sport and all there was to it. And went to university to study sports medicine and get into the industry of sport. My dad told me at that point in time that I was wasting my time. There's no money in sport. There's no industry in sport. You know, he was an accountant. He wanted me to be an accountant to work with him. So I told him I'd give it a try, and if it didn't work out, I'd get back into accountancy. And luckily, I've never ventured down that path. But when I was leaving university, I got offered an internship role with the professional rugby team in Ireland. And because I was playing elite level rugby, I also studied for like a strength and conditioning qualification when I was going through my sports medicine undergraduate. And when I came out the other side, I joined this team to work as an intern and came in with a very unique set of skills because I understood the game really well from playing. I, you know, had my strength and conditioning qualification, and I had my undergraduate after spending 4 years studying sports medicine. And I was able to come in and almost be a bit of a chameleon and kind of fit in and translate and talk to everybody. And what I learned really quickly, which was such a surprise, like I remember being very jarring, was that the sports industry and high performance and professional sport wasn't as advanced or sophisticated as I expected it to be. And it was very siloed. Like the sports medicine team did their thing. They had their own fiefdom and they operated there. Nobody was allowed in. Nobody was allowed understanding what was happening. Similarly, the strength and conditioning team, you know, they operated in the gym and they, you know, they did their own thing, and the sports medicine team and the strength and conditioning team didn't like each other, did not want to get on. You know, the sports med team saw them as like these gym monkeys, and you know, it wasn't a whole pile of respect there. And similarly, the other way around, they saw them as a bunch of nerds in the treatment room, and that also then had knock on implications for the rugby coaches, who, you know, did their own thing on the field, and they would plan for their practice sessions, plan for the strategy of a game, etc. But it happened completely away from everybody else. And what struck me as really weird was when we were coming in, we'd have these morning meetings and we'd sit down and talk about the athletes and we'd talk about what the plan is for the week. Nobody actually understood what was going on in each other's worlds. And I was kind of just like getting in and feeling around and starting to see that, hey, there's so much information being collected in all these places. Nobody is actually like allowing others to see the information that's relevant to them to do their job. And of course, the sports medicine staff don't need to like come in and comment on the practice plan or the game strategy. It's not their role. But they do need to understand the demands that are being placed on the athletes so that they can treat them appropriately and they can help make decisions about what an athlete should do on a day-to-day basis. And similarly, like from a strength and conditioning perspective, how do you make somebody fit enough? How do you make somebody strong enough, powerful enough for a game that you don't necessarily understand? If you don't understand the tactics and strategy, what are you building? Like, what characteristics are you building in the athletes to get them ready for that competition if you don't actually understand the strategy? Because different game styles have completely different like physiological demands. Therefore, we should be building athletes in a different way. And I was pretty puzzled by that and really wanted to kind of start to break down those barriers. And the initial mandate I was given was around injury rehabilitation. It was just around how do we actually get these athletes back on the field faster and how do we have like less recurrent injuries. So to do that effectively, my belief was we needed to know what the demands of the game and practice were, and we needed to have a graduated system to return our athletes back into that forum. And similarly, you know, we needed to then look at from a treatment perspective and from a physiological and healing perspective and understand what, you know, what is the smartest way then to be able to overload the athlete in a very safe and controlled manner so that we don't break people through that process. And my belief was the way to do that was through evidence, right? So we start to like collect more information about what we're doing with the athletes, collecting every detail about every, you know, weight that they're lifting in the gym, every, you know, step that they take on the field. And then to start to basically objectify that and showcase that if this is what game demands look like, this is where somebody's at today. How do we start to build that bridge and then know that we get somebody to a certain point and have them ready? So started to do that, started to collect a huge amount of data, and there was, you know, it instantly started to take effect and people started to know what was happening in each other's world and started to be really, really productive. And the head coach at that point in time gave me a mandate and said, hey, let's do this for everything. Let's start digitizing every aspect of what these guys do. Let's start making better decisions about, like, you know, all aspects of like what types of drills that we use and how we actually coach. How our athletes are responding day to day so we can better make better decisions to have them in the best shape for a game at the weekend. So I learned at that point in time then how to write VBA code in my evening times. I started to build essentially a platform for us to start collecting this this data, and with the view to essentially creating a 360-degree view of our athletes. And that's kind of how it all started. That's where the idea and the concept came from.
And, you know, it's interesting, a couple things here. So in life, those that are successful in climb are those that, that collect data from attempts and what would be called and classified as failures. They gather data, and then they come back again with that data better and stronger. And it seems so profound at the time when you were doing this, I'm sure, but it's not really profound. It seems like it makes sense. It's like in the United States when 9/11 happened, we found that a lot of the agencies were not communicating, and that caused the breakdown. And the same thing back in the day when the mafia, the Italian-American mafia, if that exists, I don't know if it exists. I'm Italian. I'm not supposed to talk about that. But but FBI, state, local, they were all competing against each other instead of sharing and collaborating. And I'm finding in business now over the last few years that competition is kind of dead in a way. It's more about collaboration, and people are finding out that when you collab, you can achieve so much more that it overcomes the competition factor. And sure. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense. Like, how are we, you know, as practitioners in the elite sports world, like, how are we supposed to make decisions about whether somebody, what somebody should do in practice on a day-to-day basis when we don't understand that? So if a head coach came to me and said, hey, you know, there's a guy, let's say, that had bumps or bruises from the game the weekend before, and he came and said, hey, is he good to train today? I'm like, well, that could mean 10 different things. I don't know what your practice plan is, and I don't know, like, exactly how intense that is. I don't know exactly, like, how much distance, what type of speeds are going to hit, how many impacts they're going to have, etc. Like, how am I supposed to make an informed or educated decision? And as soon as, like, I either just guess, or just say, yeah, he's fine, or no, he's not. And I say, yeah, he's fine. The athlete goes out, he gets broken. And then, like, he comes back to me at the end and says, you said he was fine, you idiot. And or the opposite happens, and the athlete doesn't get to train and then is not selected for the game. And then I get blamed from the athlete. So, like, was in a no-win scenario. And for me, I just felt like, hey, I'm not making these decisions. We're making it. We're doing it together. And we're all doing it from an educated perspective. And you're going to understand how this person is, like, recovering and responding. And you're going to understand their physical state. And I'm going to understand what you require of them. And we're going to make a decision together about, like, what's going to happen. And to me, that just made all the sense in the world. But we just didn't have the tools to do it. And I was really disappointed, if I'm honest, because my expectation, like, being a fanatic of sports and, you know, growing up, like, looking up and idolizing these athletes that I was seeing and this team that I love that I was now working for, my expectation was, like, these guys were the best. They were doing the best things. Their practices, their procedures, their processes, their systems were just world-class. When I came in and saw how the organization was being run, quite frankly, I was really disappointed. Like, people loved the organization and wanted to be there, but, like, we weren't world-class, and I expected more.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, you were working with one particular team at the time, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my thought immediately goes to that organization, whoever's running that, is like, dude, we got to take Stephen A. Smith and put him in a box and keep him from everybody else, right? Did that happen, number one? And number two, how did that allow you, like, did they allow you to go out and expand to allow other teams to benefit as well? Because they could create a dynasty with this.
Yeah, and listen, we did. Whilst I was there, was very, very fortunate. We had incredible coaches. We had incredible athletes. And we did a lot of research using the data that we were collecting. We ended up, like, after maybe 2 to 3 years worth of research, developing techniques to understand, like, the potential risk of injury and then being able to make better decisions about how we managed our athletes. We reduced our injury profile by just over 30% year on year for 2 years. Ended up winning 3 European Cups whilst I was there and 3 domestic trophies. And, like, it wasn't down to what I was doing, right, or what we were doing collectively as a group. It was very definitely, I think we started to collaborate and communicate way better. We started to be able to make better decisions together. And then we just maximized the resources that we have. When you have world-class talent on the field, like, pretty undeniable, if you can put them out there most often than not, you're going to win. And you have world-class coaches that can then, like, you know, develop the right strategy and game plan, you're going to be successful. So we were quite successful through that period of time. When it got to the point that it got to, honestly, it happened really organically and it snuck up on everyone. The plan for me when I started this was not to develop this company that, you know, was going to be working with thousands of teams globally like we are today. In fact, I went to the CEO of the club and asked him for money to invest into this project just for it to be an internal piece of work, because whilst we were doing it quite successfully, we also identified a number of issues with the way that we were doing it. It wasn't as good as we wanted it to be. We wanted to improve that, but we didn't have the cash to be able to go and invest in it. So we asked them for the money to do that, and they said no. And I kind of parked the project for a couple of years, continued to work, and then a couple of years later, I was getting really frustrated. I just finished my master's. I was getting really frustrated with the lack of progress that I was able to make, and my skills in coding were just I'd hit the limit of what I could do. And I'd heard about this pitch competition, almost like Shark Tank, that the Irish government hosts, and they host this for startup businesses, and they give you 50,000 in seed funding. So decided I'm gonna enter this and see what happens. So I just put together an application, popped in, did a presentation, and ended up winning the pitch competition and getting the funding. And then off the back of that, the Irish government organized this PR around this, because what they're trying to do is, get people to recognize you, get excited about the story, and get other people to invest in the concept or idea and stimulate the growth of the business. And when this happened, a couple of the players from the team saw the PR release, were like, "Hey, why didn't you tell us you were doing this? If you're going to do this, we want to be part of it." And I was like, "Well, there's no way I'm coming to work every day and taking your money, putting it into this business. If this thing fails, I have to look at you every day and feel like an idiot." So I didn't want to take their money. And a couple of them were just like, "Well, we don't care. We live this every day. We know how this works. We know how it operates. And we're big boys. It's our money. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work." And so they then, and a couple of friends, basically gave us our seed funding and started this all happening. And the company was formed, and we were starting to move before anybody realized it was even real, right? At that point, you couldn't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. And so one of the challenges was when that team, the leadership of the team said no, right? That's one of the challenges. During the rest of that, once you started getting the money, what are some other times where you started to have uncertainty or doubt based on some things you ran into, or were there any? I mean, I got to think there were.
Yeah, I had, there was something that you mentioned at the start of this where you talked about the fact that the kind of hidden stories behind all the challenges that people face in business. And when people from the outside look in and see success, they just see this perfect utopia. And I think the reality is far from the truth. We've like anybody, we have issues every week, right, that we're trying to overcome. And I have an investor, a guy called John Malloy, who's a managing partner at Blue Run Ventures, and he's invested in hundreds of companies, many very famous, very successful, billion-dollar companies, and he's generally first money into them, companies PayPal, companies Waze, so big organizations. And he's always said to me, the books get published about the stories of these companies. There's multiple books about PayPal and how perfect it was and how smart everybody was. And he sits down and he's like, "Nobody remembers all of the crap. Nobody remembers all of the problems, all of the challenges that you run into." And for me, being a first-time CEO, it's been hugely challenging. At every step and stage of the company's growth, at the very beginning, I was talking with investors and they would mention pieces of terminology or jargon from the investment industry. And I would be so confused. I literally would be on Google typing in, trying to figure out what is it that they're actually talking about. So exploring the financing side of how you support and sustain a venture-backed business, the learning curve on something like that is incredible. And I was just really lucky that I got incredible investors that understood that. And they kind of said to us, "Hey, we didn't invest in you because of your business acumen. We invested in you because of who you are and the idea that you have. And we have the understanding and we're here to support you. And when you don't understand something, the best thing that you can do is put your hand up. There's no shame in that. We get that you've never done this. We don't expect you to know any of these things." And honestly, I think getting that permission at the beginning of this journey for me, that it wasn't expected for me to be great in that area, I think was just such a relief. And it probably, if I didn't get that advice or that permission at the beginning, I'm not sure I'd be as far along with this business as I am today.
There's so much there, man. There's so much there. All right, let me point one thing out. First of all, you said that nobody remembers all those difficult times after they win. But while you're in it, I think that's a really good point to remember as you're on a journey and you have a bad day or bad moment or bad week or whatever it is, that that's not the end. and that you're not going to remember as long as you keep going and keep winning. Like, get to the win, get to the win. Remember the big picture. And by the way, we're talking about sports and we're talking about business. And it could be in life as well. So I love this. And then the other thing I wanted to point out, the other thing is that stay in your genius. Don't try to be a genius in all these areas and ask for help. Like people, this, like, I'm a performance mental, I'm on the mental side, which we're going to get into in a second. I want to hear your take on some of that. But the mental side of things, people so many times will fail at helping someone. And then they'll quit trying to help people, or somebody will, they'll ask for help from someone and that person failed in helping them or took advantage of them or whatever the case is. And then they stop asking for help. And so help is a really huge topic that I keep bringing up to people because I don't want people to ever get a warped sense of help. And you know, what you just said is like these investors, they're teamed up with you. It's not like they're giving you this money and then they're like, dude, Steven, go, man, go win. And then you know, be isolated. They're on the same team with you.
Yeah, and they've been like that every day. And I think one of the analogies they used with me at the beginning was like, if coming from a rugby background, coming from sport, they were like, you don't ask every person in your team to do every single job. Your quarterback has a different role to a running back, to a cornerback, to a tight end. Like, so, you know, their message to me was, do what you're great at. Do what you're great at. And then like you get to pick your team, right? You get to pick your team and you surround yourself with people that have different skill sets and different capabilities and are world class at what they do. And then you wouldn't have a team without having like a head coach or, you know, a number of coaches, like a group of assistant coaches. And they're like, that's our job. Our job is to be there and for you to pull and drag from us as you need us. And we'll be here. Every time you want to pick up the phone and call us, we will always be here. We'll always be there to solve problems. And they're like, you know, they were like, you have to take a step back from venture capital and really understand what it's about. We are putting our money in, like we're putting our money in and saying, we believe in you. We believe in your idea. And they're like, nobody has more on the line than us because we put our money in. Everybody else just shows up and gets a paycheck. We put our money in. We don't get anything out of this unless this works. And when I thought about it like that, because at the start I was like, these guys put their money in and they're like marking my homework every day, right? But when I flipped my mindset, I was like, they're more invested than anybody else. Like they need this to work, otherwise they lose. Like they lose more than anybody. I can walk away tomorrow and I'll get a job somewhere else and I'll move on. They've put millions of dollars behind this idea. And I think that when you look at things from a psychological aspect of like, what's the motivation of people? What are they trying to do? Once I was able to take that step and understand what they were there for, it's completely changed the dynamic of my relationship with them. And anytime I run into an issue, I'm on the phone with them talking about it and saying, hey, here's the ideas that I have for a solution. What do I do? And I've just been lucky to have like great people around me that really love me and really support me and like just, you know, want nothing more for this business to be a success. Number one, because they put their money where their mouth is. But number two, because like they've developed such a relationship with me that they care about me as well. And that's important in life, right? And it's real. I think it's really important in business too, because when stuff gets really hard, it's easy for people to walk away when there's not a relationship there, when there's not like caring there, when there's not love there. When there's those things and you've built those kind of that backbone around a business, I think, you know, those hard times become so much easier because like everybody's in it together.
Yeah. And, you know, would you have considered, are you considered the fact that you've gotten momentum and traction now? Is that you've passed that point?
I hope so.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a lot of good product market fit, like really, you know, fast growing business with like really long standing established relationships with customers.
Yeah. So I wanted to preface what I'm about to ask you with that question. So when you did start to get that traction and momentum, can you kind of go through that emotional state that you were in and then what took place during that time and after?
Yeah, well, I think probably before, right, before you get that product market fit, right, and you're just trying lots of different concepts and ideas, there's a huge amount of fear there because there's like that fear of failure, that fear of like, was this the right thing to do? And, you know, we have on lots of different levels, was it the right thing to do for my life? Was it the right thing to do for like for my wife and kids? And was it the right thing to do for my family and my friends? And I move across the world to like to do this. I'm missing lots of different things. And then there's like, was that the right thing to do for the employees, right? Was like, if this doesn't work, they don't have jobs. They don't get to pay their mortgages. They don't get to like support their kids and their families. You know, they don't have healthcare that they have today. all of those things really matter. And then you have that fear of, have I like taken all this money from my investors, made promises to them, told them what's going to happen in the industry, and that's not going to work? Like, that is so frightening and so scary. So I think when you start to get, at least for me, when we started to get that real product market fit, and we got like the first really big clients that started to come on board and sign up, the first sensation is relief. And I know that might sound weird. A lot of people are like, yeah, let's go. Like, it's like with success, we're so happy. For me, it was just like being able to exhale, because the stress that builds up in you when you're wondering, are these the right decisions? Have I done the right things? And you feel the responsibility of like of your actions. I think that just like being able to like let go and go, okay, great, we're good. that relief is huge. And then I think once you start to get through that, it's like pride, right? Pride and enjoyment. Like the fact that I came up with an idea, you know, on my kitchen table, and now there's like 2,000 teams globally using our technology. Like, that's
so
really
awesome.
Cool. It's like, it's really, really cool. And then like getting on site with some of these leagues and teams that we work with and seeing them use the product and then hearing some of the ideas that they have. Because like, as good an idea as I had, I'm not using the technology every day anymore, right? I'm not in the market. I don't work with athletes every day. I don't work with coaches. So like having the humility, I think, to like lean on the people that are using the technology today and listen to their ideas, because now there's thousands of them that are like, hey, this would be really cool. What if I could do this? What if I could go in this direction? We obviously have a vision for what we're trying to do, but how that gets unpacked is really important. And we've been doing that with the market, and we've been doing that with the like the customers, partners that we work with that care enough about what we're doing and see the same kind of vision for the future with us. And that's just been so much fun. I think once you can kind of shake off the stress, the fear, all those pieces, and start getting into like, where can this get to? Like, it's just so creative, so innovative, and so much fun. Like, I love what I do. And you know that like analogy, like you do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. Like, dude, I'm living the dream.
I love it. Yeah, man, me too. I feel that now. Cause after being in a business where I was making a lot of money and not feeling fulfilled and not feeling that feeling, and I was work, it's totally different. And life is so short, man. If you know, I told my son, he's getting ready to graduate high school. I said, listen, work for our company right now until you find something that you love and that you can make money at. And you have this foundation, you know, where you can stay in this position until you do that, but let's keep moving towards that. So I love that. Now, do you think there's going to be a time? Cause I'm witnessing right now a team in this local high school in a small town of Maryland that I live in. The football team, the wrestling team, the basketball team, they're all winning state championships or going close. And the athletes that this school is starting to produce are like, you know, SEC type, Power Five school type, football, whatever. Do you think that this product is going to get into the high school where the high schools can take advantage of this too, even though they don't have the staff that a pro team or a college team does?
100%. I mean, we're already seeing like the amount of people leveraging and using the system in the collegiate space is enormous. And then we have like major contracts with like MLS Next, where you work across all of their academy systems. So like every kid from 12 years old all the way through to the end of their academy structure is using the platform. We also have a huge contract with the Premier League, where every kid from the age of 8 years old all the way through to the end of their academy careers are like leveraging the system as well. And that's like probably 15,000 athletes within that cohort. Like we're already starting to apply all of these principles to like talent development and youth sports. So I don't think it's too long. And the other dynamic is that we're seeing huge democratization of some of the types of data that are being collected to support this, whether it's wearable sensors, whether it's optical trackers that are being used both in practice and in games. We're starting to see that happen more and more frequently. The cost of getting access to those devices is becoming cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And that means that we will see a lot of high schools that will be leveraging technology like that. As soon as they start collecting technology like that, where are they going to put it? What are they going to do with it? How are they going to leverage it? Those staff members are going to go on the exact same journey that I did. And they're going to realize that they're going to need tools to leverage that information, put it to use. And we're going to be ready. And we're going to be there. And we're going to be excited about supporting them. And I think that that also has an enormous impact on the top of like the pyramid as well. We talk about pro sport and elite sport, because today, or maybe when I started, if you like an athlete arrived into your professional environment, that was the first day that data was collected on. How good are the decisions that you can make when you have no historical information on somebody? Pretty limited. Now we're starting to get a huge bank of collegiate data, and that collegiate data is following an athlete into the professional ranks. We can make better decisions. If we can start getting information from high school, by the time somebody gets to the professional career, they're going to have 10 years worth of data. Imagine how high quality those decisions will be when we understand every aspect about like the medical status of that athlete, every piece of information about their physical development, every piece of information about the fitness of them, every piece of information about their psychological health and how to manage them, and like their coaching history, and like essentially their entire pathway to professionalism. The quality of the decisions that will be made will just be mind-blowing. I think we'll see. You know, everybody looks at elite sports today and look at the records that are being built in or being broken in athletics and things like that. We haven't even seen, I think, a real inflection in that yet, because as data becomes more pervasive in the pathway of development of athleticism, we will unlock new capabilities around how we train our athletes. We will learn so much more about what it takes to build performance, and we'll be able to make incredible decisions. And we would love to be right down the middle of that journey and helping people to do that.
Yeah, I got to get you in touch with this high school coach, because he's pretty phenomenal. He's developing these players that it's just amazing. So I'd love for them to be one of the first to get into it in high school. But so something else I wanted to ask you regards to, stats. So LeBron James scored 40,000 points recently, right? And, you know, and then sometimes he sits games where people pay money to go to and all that, and they got to sit out. But do you think that we're going to see a substantial amount of records being broken in regards to stats, and due to maybe the performance, better performance each game or over the season, but not only that, over a career, the length of a career, right?
Absolutely.
Like blow stats out of the water.
Look at the duration of their careers as well. I mean, like one of the reasons why LeBron, not to take away from how great he is, because he's exceptional, but one of the reasons he's been able to do that is longevity. He, like, the duration of his career is way longer than his predecessors, right? They weren't having careers as long as him. And we're seeing that. Moreover, there are people like that have like really lengthy careers. And when you couple that with incredible talent, you're going to have something really special. And I think one thing that LeBron has done exceptionally well is that he's treated his body as his business. He invested in a team of people around him to keep him right, because potentially when he first started his professional, you know, career, they didn't have access to data and technology like they do today. They couldn't make great decisions. So he hired an army to basically, you know, produce that for him. And it was like probably the greatest investment of his life. I'm sure he would probably say that. But we see, like, look at Patrick Mahomes, right? When you compare the success he has had over such a short career versus, like, you mentioned Tom Brady, right? Tom Brady had such an incredible career. You compare the stats from both of those athletes, like Patrick Mahomes is nearly there already, and he has a good runway in front of him, and that's pretty incredible. So I think data and technology is going to play an enormous role in elongating careers and elevating like the performance levels of athletes as well, and that is going to see like incredible records being broken over the next number of years. And I think that's, for as a sports fan, that's awesome, right? That's what we want to see.
Yeah.
We want to see that excellence, right?
Yeah, 100%. All right, look, as we wind down here, I could talk to you for hours, obviously. The show is usually 30-ish to 40 minutes long. I got to end with this part, the mental game. Are you into the mental game at all, the psychology of it, the sports psychology? Do you integrate any of that into this? Because I know from studying that the mental game and even spirituality can increase the speed and effectiveness of recovery.
Yeah, I think tools. Psychology is, regardless of whether you call it sports psychology or whatever, I think psychology in general, when you think about any business principle, is key. Your mindset, how you think about something, of course it's going to have an impact. If you show up every day, like you're in the middle of a rehab and you're showing up every day and everything is bad, you're going to feel crap, right? You're going to feel crap. You're not going to apply yourself the same way. I think mindset and psychology is enormous. And also when you think about the journey that some of these people or athletes that we're dealing with are coming up against, these are oftentimes 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old athletes who, you know, come from a variety of different backgrounds and then get thrown into this like coliseum of like fame and success with huge expectations and responsibility on their shoulders. And I think you talk to any smart coach or any of the really successful teams today, they're not just looking at physical fitness. They're not just looking at strength and power. They're trying to understand like the mental well-being of these athletes. You're trying to develop a complete athlete. And that means building that resilience. That means helping them understand, how do you deal with those big occasions? How do you prepare yourself for a game? How do you prepare yourself for success? How do you prepare yourself for failure? How do you prepare yourself for things that are going well and things that are going poorly? Like, how do you build that psychological strength and resilience and robustness into athletes? So, we collect a lot of that data in the system today. And I think that that is becoming an ever emerging and growing area. And I think the use cases for that data to support athletes and to, you know, to help them, again, elongate their careers, help them increase their performance potential is huge.
Yeah, I love it, man. Well, I want to thank you for your time today, man. It's been great. I love this conversation. Where can people find you the easiest, or where should they engage with you further?
Our website's the easiest place, kippenlabs.com, or we're available on X, I believe it's called now.
Yeah, also on X.
At Kippen Labs. We'd love to hear from people. And listen, we just really appreciate the fact that we're here today. We love what we do. We're having so much fun with it. And I look forward to coming back here in a couple of years' time and talking about more success and more growth.
Awesome. Stephen Smith, everyone. Hope you guys enjoyed this. Stephen A. Smith. Yeah, Stephen A. Smith, the Irish version. He's in the building. Steve, thanks for being here, man. Thank you all for watching and listening, however you're consuming this content. It's your boy, C-Rock. Make sure you like, subscribe, share these episodes that vibe with you, because we're going to continue to do this and we're going to continue to grow. It's your boy, C-Rock, signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing.